You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Bruce Wayne made his debut 77 years ago on comic book pages, and in just a few days, you'll hear that latest incarnation on the big screen. Batman is a character who has been an American longtime cultural icon, but despite his longevity, the Batman we know today isn't the same as the Batman of yesterday. Over the years, Batman has been reinvented multiple times since he was first introduced to the public in 1939. He's been campy and fun and even grim and growling. That's how he seems to be today. Joining us now is Glenn Weldon. He reviews books, including comic books for NPR, and is a panelist on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. His most recent book, just out today, is called The Caped Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture. Glenn, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, you write that we read books, but we feel comics. What does that mean to you as far as Batman fandom goes?
Well, comics don't build up their tone and their feel to you the way that prose does. You have to read a few pages to get the tone of a book, but it's all embedded in the lines, in the thickness of the ink, in the colors, in the mood of the piece. It's immediately apparent. So, Batman has been dealt with in many different moods over the years. He started off as a very clear-cut ripoff of the Shadow, but that only lasted for about a year. Then, because people were worried about the violence in the comic and the fact that its main audience was very young children, he introduced Robin the Boy Wonder to give kids somebody to identify with, lightened the tone considerably, and stayed a very happy-go-lucky cop in a cape for the next 30 years. Then the television show came along and changed everything.
And you said that Batman does, though. He has this particular devoted fan base that you might not see with other superheroes, but at least the fans that love him because he's really relatable. What is it you think that is so relatable about Batman?
Well, I'd say he's relatable to nerds. Basically, when I started writing this book, I talked to a lot of nerds, and they all told me he's relatable. He's like me. I could be Batman. And what I had to point out to them is that he's not really relatable. He does have a superpower, and that superpower is his wealth, his unimaginable, limitless wealth, which functions in any given Batman story like magic to make the incredibly impossible, vaguely plausible for the purposes of the story. I think what's truly relatable about Batman is his mission. He, in 1970, after the show, the television show, the Batman Adam West television show went off the air, the creators of the comics thought they needed to remake him completely, to distance themselves from the Adam West series as much as they could, because the nerds who were reading comic books at that time hated it. It was also the nerds were older than they were even just 5 years before. All of a sudden, the core comics fan base was teens and adults, not young kids. So they needed a Batman to speak to them, and so they made him an obsessive. They made him, essentially, a nerd. And the readership at the time, who were bagging and boarding their comics, who would obsessively have these Talmudic dissections of various bits of arcana in the back of what were the beginning of comic book stores, they knew, they recognized something in this character. There are other superheroes who are nerds. Peter Parker's a nerd, but Batman is obsessed, and that's the key to the character.
Let's listen to a little bit of that original Batman, the Adam West. Here it is.
Whoever dehydrated those pirates could not have foreseen their accidental rehydration with the heavy water we use in recharging the atomic pile.
And add to that a couple pows and whams, and you've kind of got that first Batman. What do you think appealed to people about that first Batman? He was a little more fun and not sort of this sort of nihilistic Batman that we see now. People liked it then. Why did they?
Well, he had transcended the comic book page several times before. There were a couple of movie serials, and there certainly was. He appeared on the radio along with Superman back in the 40s and 50s. But the thing about that series is that it took the existing comics of the day, the 1964-65 comics, and planted them on screen without really adapting them, without really making fun of them. Because the key here is that the pop art movement was cresting. Pop art movement valued things that were colorful and slick and mass-produced, things like comic books. Artists like Roy Lichtenstein basically ripped off comic books to make art that sold for the thousands. And So they rode that wave as much as they could. And they just, all they did was they took the comics, planted them on screen, and said, we will assert this as if it's the most serious thing in the world, as if it's an Ibsen play. We want to treat this as sacrosanct. And that produced a kind of humor that I really hadn't been seen before. The word camp came to be associated with it only because Susan Sontag's essays on camp, Notes on Camp, had just come out a couple years ago before the show was introduced. And all the critics and cultural commentators applied it to the show. The show is actually closer to kitsch than camp. It doesn't have really the gay connotations that the word camp does. But it became hugely popular, so hugely popular that it fizzled out within 2 years.
You've said that you have a profound and passionate love for that 60s show. What did you love about it personally?
Well, you know, as a kid, it has a famous bifurcated appeal, that show. As a kid, you love it because pow zap, because of the action, because of the colors. As an adult, you love it because it's funny. But something happens to us nerds as we age. As we enter adolescence, we start to resent the heck out of that show because we feel it is making fun of this character we love. And in fact, it's not. What it's doing, again, is it's just taking this character very seriously, as he existed then. And I argue in the book that the American superhero has entered an age of perpetual adolescence where we are being told again and again by the fan base and by creators that these characters, who were created to entertain children and have to have a level of fun and whimsy to them, must be taken deadly, deadly seriously. So this is what we see Batman today. This is a very grim, gritty character who doesn't admit light and humor into his world. But it's a cycle. He cycles through lightness and darkness. He's in a very dark place now, but there's encouraging signs that we're going to go back toward the light very soon.
We're talking with Glenn Weldon right now. He reviews books, comics for NPR, and he's got a new book out today. It's called The Caped Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture. And Glenn, getting back to the nerd culture aspect of all this again, and you pointed out how there wasn't a lot of irony with that 60s Batman, but that seems to be sort of the hallmark of nerd culture, is that people aren't liking things in a sort of wink-wink, nudge-nudge kind of way. They like them completely and ironically and obsessively, and that's sort of what makes nerd culture nerd culture.
The best thing about nerd culture is an unironic enthusiasm, a passion for a thing, a passion that you want to share with others. The worst thing about nerd culture is very closely related to that, which is this feeling that the mainstream has accepted this thing that I love, and because they don't love the thing I love for exactly the same reasons that I do, to the same extent that I do, they're doing it wrong. And it goes from being a passion to share to a passion to hoard and to hold to ourselves and to keep the other people out. It becomes, if it's unchecked, toxic, frequently misogynistic, frequently racist, frequently homophobic. At least it used to. It is changing now with more women, people of color, queer folk in the fan base. It is getting better. A fan base that reflects the world at large is a better fan base and makes for a better and deeper and richer experience with the character.
And you tell some stories about this, right? About how new Batman movies would get released, and if they got a negative review, people would kind of go bananas about it and post all kinds of, spew all kinds of hate at the director and the reviewers online. What did the internet have to do with all this?
Well, the internet basically just mapped over existing nerd networks because, you know, nerds had been getting together at cons and in the back pages of comics and in fanzines, certainly, for years and years and years. The internet came along and just said, hey, we're gonna create a way for you guys to get in touch with each other very, very easily now. And when that happened, a lot of barriers to entry, the things that nerds love is just going on a deep dive into a thing and building up a lifetime's worth of knowledge. And now, in a day, you could know as much about Batman as I do by just going online. You could poke around and see a lot of stuff that's written out there. This is true for all the things we nerd out about. It's if you're a beer snob or a politics wonk or whatever you are, whatever thing you love, you can get access to it very simply. But the industry learned a lot. The movie-making industry learned a lot about nerds between the time of the Tim Burton films and the Joel Schumacher films and the time, about 10 years later, with the Christopher Nolan films. The nerd fan base hated and resented the Tim Burton films at first and really went to town on the Schumacher films for a lot of reasons because they felt the industry was not was playing in bad faith. They didn't really care about this character. They were just trying to make a multi-million dollar film, which in fact was the case. And by the time the Nolan films came along, they had learned so much of the huge backlash that certainly the Schumacher films had gotten that they coached the cast members, the producers, the director. The marketing team at Warner's called them in and said, we are going to give you chapter and verse. When you are doing interviews, you're going to say that you're a lifetime comics fan, that you love Batman, and these are the comics story arcs that we have borrowed to make this movie. And that turned the fan base into fans of this film series. And when they got attacked, or even when they got mildly criticized by the critical community, the fans reacted because they were now pointing their daggers outside the tent and not inward.
I got to ask you about one thing. You use the word nerd instead of geek. Now, I know that in some circles they're interchangeable, but we have talked to some card-carrying geeks on the show who say that if you're really into a topic, you call yourself a geek and not a nerd. So why do you choose nerd?
I choose nerd because I try to make a distinction between nerds and normals. Now, that that distinction is going away, and I like the sound of nerds and normals better than geeks and normals.
Talking to Glenn Weldon right now. He's author of the book The Caped Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture. It just came out today. And we're talking about the history and the evolution of an American superhero and icon, Batman. And we want to hear from you. You can call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. If you're a Batman fan, let us know how he came into your life, what he's meant to you, and who is your favorite Batman? Who did your ideal version? Who's the ultimate Batman? Call 800-642-1234. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're talking with Glenn Weldon about his new book just out today called The Caped Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture. And we're talking about how Batman, a character who was introduced to the country in 1939, has remained such a big part of our culture after decades. And we want to know what you think. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. When you were introduced to Batman, what did he mean to you? Do you like that campy 60s version, or do you like kind of the growly Christian Bale, Val Kilmer, Ben Affleck maybe version of Batman? Call 800-642-1234. And Glenn, let's talk about Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. Mm-hmm. It's coming out in just a few days. What iteration of Batman are we expecting to see then?
We're expecting to see something very close to the Christopher Nolan Batman, with a dash of the Frank Miller Batman. Now, Frank Miller wrote a few Batman stories. The one that this is borrowing most heavily from is called The Dark Knight Returns. Came out in 1985 and 1986, which shows a Batman who has been retired coming back to take back Gotham City from a variety of ills, including a Superman who has been co-opted by the military-industrial complex. He introduced this notion that these two characters would not get along, because for most of their history up to that point, apart from some kind of wacky scrapes, they were pals. They hung out. But they do have very different approaches, so it makes sense that they would come into conflict.
And do you think, you said there was going to be maybe some light leavening of Batman? You said this is probably going to be in that same sort of very dark, growly version of Batman that we've been seeing for a while. What light do you see that Batman might be lightening up down the road?
Well, the fact that the 66 series has come out on DVD and Blu-ray finally, because it, for many years, DC Comics and Warner's were basically trying to deny its existence because they wanted to focus on the dark, grim, gritty version. That series used to make fun of the fact that Batman was such a square because it was the 60s, right? And he was the establishment figure. Now, in the most recent Lego movie, they had a version of Batman voiced by Will Arnett, and the reason he was made fun of is because he takes himself way too seriously. I think that's the movement we're seeing now. We're more and more people are starting to come around to the fact that this guy has to get over himself at some point. And that is allowing a little bit of light into this thing. And as for the movie itself, what you have is essentially jock versus nerd, right? Raw power in the case of Superman and strategy and cunning in the case of Batman. And if I'm taking bets, I'm always team nerd.
And did you like that Will Arnett version of Batman? I thought that was pretty funny. I'm not a super Batman nerd, but I totally got that having seen a few of the movies.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. It's exactly what we needed. It's the right approach to him. He has gone from being made fun of for one reason to being made fun of for another reason. And, you know, we have to lighten up. These characters are ideals. They represent, they work on an emotional, psychological level, and they have to kind of lift us up. And as if they are simply depressing and grim, they're not doing their job.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Karen on the line in Green Bay. Karen, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What did you want to share?
Well, I'm actually 61, and when I was in grade school back in the 60s, my sister Kim, my friend Lana, and another friend Jill started a Batman club, and we actually reenacted Batman at the playground. It was part of our play activity. And we still joke, and when it's Batman Day, I don't know, it's something from our childhood that he became part of our play activity, and I guess we liked him.
And are you looking forward to the new Batman versus Superman?
Yes, and we've kind of followed that along the way. I guess, you know, now it's kind of silly when you see boom and pow and all of that kind of stuff, but... And I enjoy the new version, but it's a little dark, you know. Mm-hmm. The play, if I was playing that character, it'd be a little different play activity, I guess.
Karen, thanks a lot. So Karen's growing up with this, obviously, but she's carried it with her. Is that typical of the people who were really into Batman?
Well, the fad for the show faded among adults, but kids still love it. And it kept being played and replayed in syndication because they made something like 130 episodes in 2 years' time. They just churned this thing out. In fact, there were a lot of people like her, a lot of kids like her. When this show premiered, there was an uptick in schoolyard violence because kids were imitating what they saw on screen. And the PTA actually issued a whole letter to parents because they noticed, because there was an uptick in trips to the school nurse that particular year.
Wow, that's a real-world influence there. Do you think he still has that kind of power?
I think when you can make a version of this character that is all ages, that kids can appreciate, you're going to have them for life in some way or another. The Batman animated series, which was on the air in the 90s, told some of the smartest, sharpest Batman stories around. They did it in a half an hour every day, and they did it tight, little done-in-one stories, and they did it in a way that kids could appreciate again, as opposed to the comics, which had ignored kids for many, many years and was just focusing on teens and adults.
Now, we haven't talked yet about the iconic Batmans. We talked a little bit about Adam West. We had Val Kilmer, Michael Keaton, I think, Michael Keaton and Ben Affleck coming up. What do you think about the lineage of Batman?
Well, you know, one of the things that always struck me as I was doing the research for this book is that when the critics would tell whether or not a person made a good Batman, they would inevitably talk about how he played Bruce Wayne, because that is key, because Bruce Wayne is an act and Batman is the real guy. That's something that you have to key into. And the other thing they would talk about is what kind of chin they had, because again, in this costume, all you get of the guy is about an inch around his mouth, and so you have to emote a lot with just your jawline. And in the case of Adam West, with your with your finger, he would wiggle his finger in a way to kind of see that all of the stuff that he would normally do with his face when he had the mask on was in his hand.
Wow. So are you optimistic about Ben Affleck? Do you like this pick?
I live in hope. I rent in Please Don't Suck, but I live in hope. I'm not crazy about what Zack Snyder has done with the Superman character. I don't think it fits that character. I think it's a little too one-note, and you can't just take the tone from the Christopher Nolan films and apply it to every character under the sun. But, you know, this is Batman, and the Batman who is a grim, gritty, sort of urban ninja is the Batman that exists in the cultural consciousness right now, and I think he's going to tick that box.
And one thing we haven't talked about, we haven't said his name once, and we're almost out of time, but Robin. Tell us a little bit about your take on Robin and where he fits in the Batman lexicon.
Well, Batman cycles through being a lone Avenger, a lone vigilante, to becoming a father figure to Robin, to eventually assuming the leadership of this vast brood of bat-themed protégés. Having him in a relationship with Robin, having the two of them work together, is very important. It's half the story. It does bring with it certain homoerotic overtones, which are certainly not intended, but that doesn't mean they ain't there. And in fact, in the 40s and 50s, that became a thing. And that's why that's why a lot of things in the Batman comic changed.
Glenn, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much. It was fun.
That was Glenn Weldon. He reviews books and comic books for NPR. He's a panelist on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. His most recent book is called The Caped Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture.